Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello and welcome to this Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, your host, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. So how are you? Fine? Bearing up over life circumstances, as someone put it to me. I quite like that, bearing up over rather than bearing under life circumstances. That's what we all need more of, bounce back ability. Oh, to be able to resurrect after every crucifixion in life. Well, that is precisely the good news we have been celebrating over the past weeks of Easter. Not only did Jesus bounce back to life on the third day, but he has secured for us resurrection, bounce back ability, new life. With Jesus, we can triumph over the 1,001 little deaths which we die daily. With Jesus, we can have victory over the grave when we die for the last time. With Jesus, we can die to our old self and rise to a new self. Be born again, burst our eggshell, have our watery life, so far become the rich wine of fullest living. Anyway, more about this in a moment, but let's get into the Easter mood with a song appropriately entitled Easter Hymn, sung by the BBC Welsh Chorus. Last week, we were simply rejoicing at the resurrection of Jesus. But this week, let's take a step back and pause to think about what it might mean for us. Resurrection, so what? Why all this Easter excitement? What's it got to do with your life and mine? And before even that, let's rub our eyes and consider, did it really happen, as recorded in the Bible? What are we being asked to believe here? Does it stand up to a bit of rigorous scientific scrutiny? We read about the resurrection of Jesus in all four Gospels in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. They, of course, are biased. They are believers. Much more than that, if it wasn't precisely for the resurrection, they would not be believers in Jesus of Nazareth. If it was not for the fact that he is the one who came back from the dead to tell us, they would not have written any Gospels. No resurrection, no Bible. No church, no Sunday as a holy day, no Christians, no Sunday schools, no Christian missionaries, no Christian social reforms, no hope of heaven, no love your enemies, no go the second mile, no forgive 70 times 7, no ministers or priests, no holy half hour, no me speaking with you, no nothing, just a godless world. And indeed, not even that, for it needs God for it to exist as a world. So if Jesus, our God, is crucified, dead and buried, gone, deceased, shuffled off his mortal coil, departed, no more, I feel a Monty Python sketch coming on, then there is nothing right enough. No resurrection, and everything about the Christian faith falls like a pack of cards. It's only because Jesus came back from the dead that people started to take an interest in a first century Palestinian carpenter from an obscure town called Nazareth. Only then were people interested in what he had said and done and how he was born and so on. People in every generation have stopped and stared at the risen Jesus, and like Cliff Richard in this case, asked, "Can it be true the things they say of you?"
Can it be true the things they say of you? You walk this earth sharing with friends you knew all that they had, the work, the joy, the pain, that we might find our way to heaven again. And day by day, you still return this way, but we recall there was a debt to pay out of your love for your own world above. You left that holy thing, your endless love to prove. Can it be true the things they did to you? The death, the shame. And were your friends so few? Yet you returned again, alive and free. Can it be true? My Lord, it had to be. My Lord, it had to be.
Well, let's check out a few things to see how true it all is. Let's tackle head-on the doubts about the resurrection. To help me, I have conscripted my wife, Patricia. I should say at this point, she does not believe a word she is saying. It's just that I needed another voice to articulate the doubts of the sceptics. Personally, she believes in the resurrection as much as I do. Anyway, thanks for playing devil's advocate, Patricia. At least you can get to contradict your husband in public and get off with it.
Jesus did not rise again. The woman, upset by their grief, simply went to the wrong tomb, an empty one. When that man at the tomb said, "He is not here," that is all he meant. He's not here.
But the same woman had watched Jesus being buried just a couple of days earlier. They knew they had to come back, and grief etches certain details very clearly on your mind. Why did the Jewish authorities not point out the right tomb and produce the dead body when talk about Jesus rising from the dead began to spread?
Well, objection two. Jesus did not die. He just fainted on the cross, and in the cool tomb he revived.
The Gospels, written by people who did not want Jesus to die, go to great lengths to stress that Jesus was really dead. The professional executioners, the Roman soldiers, thrust a spear in his side to double-check that he was truly dead. They decided there was no need to break his legs as well, which was the other test. Even if perchance he had recovered from all that, how could he roll away the massive stone from inside the tomb?
Well, maybe the Jews stole the body to prevent pilgrimages to the martyr's shrine.
It was the Jews who asked for the tomb to be sealed and for a military guard to be placed at it. If the Jews had stolen the body, they would have shown it to quash rumours that Jesus was alive again. But more than that, Jews believe the Old Testament when it declares that anyone who dies on a cross is cursed. They had absolutely no conception of someone being crucified and being a martyr or a hero.
What about the possibility of the disciples themselves stealing the body of Jesus so they could claim that he was risen?
The disciples never thought that Jesus would rise again. They were totally taken by surprise. They would have had to substantiate their claim by showing a living Jesus. A dead body would have been no use to them, though, would it? It would have undermined their argument somewhat. Remember that guards were put outside the tomb specifically to stop disciples doing this. And a lie and a con trick would not have been enough to transform the disciples themselves from being cowards who ran away, becoming missionaries and martyrs for their faith in Jesus.
Maybe all we can say is that Jesus' influence lives on. You know, a bit like Robert Burns is dead, but his poetry and influence lives on. The legend continues.
We have to trust the eyewitnesses, and they say that Jesus was physically visible, alive and kicking. They even ate with him. The tomb was physically empty. Jesus walked and talked with them. He said to the thief on the cross, "Today you will be with me in paradise." He promised to all his disciples, "Because I live, you will live also." Millions of Christians down the centuries would not have given their lives and be willing to die for a myth, a legend. People only do that because they are sure Jesus is still alive and that they will live with him forever in the future.
Aye, but the disciples could have been suffering from hallucinations. Grief, you know, can play funny tricks on the mind. It was maybe just wishful thinking that Jesus was back alive.
Is it really plausible that Christianity is founded on an illusion, just the product of wishful thinking? Could that change the world? Could that have changed the broken, beaten disciples themselves into heroes of faith? If there was no substance, no reality, wouldn't it have collapsed long ago? Why would 21st century scientific Scots and people of all centuries and cultures all round the globe all share exactly the same hallucination as the original distraught disciples? After all these theories, why not believe the Gospels and the eyewitnesses at face value? Miraculous and mysterious though the idea of Jesus coming back from the dead is, surely it is less fanciful than all these other hypothetical suggestions. True, it is a great mystery, but that does not make it false.
And wash his off me.
When it comes down to it, the real proof of the resurrection of Jesus does not lie in discussing theories. The real proof of the pudding is in the eating, in our own experience. You can talk about somebody behind their back till the cows come home, but that is no substitute for meeting the person and treating them as you find them. The disciple Thomas was not with the other disciples when Jesus appeared to them. No matter how hard they tried, they could not convince Thomas about the resurrection of Jesus. He spoke for all of us when he declared, "Unless I see him with my own eyes, I will never believe it." Fortunately for Thomas, Jesus made a special second appearance just for his personal benefit. When Thomas saw Jesus standing live in front of his eyes, inviting him to put his hands into his side and feel the nail prints in his hands, he fell down and worshipped Jesus, saying, "My Lord and my God." This was not theory, discussion, persuasion. This was overwhelming, irrefutable proof, demanding worship and devotion.
Your Majesty gave up.
I know I can hear your thoughts from here. That was different. Domus had the unique experience of standing in front of the risen Jesus and getting a personal revelation in the flesh. Well, it wasn't quite so unique. The Bible says that Jesus appeared to over 500 people like that. Okay, but that was only for 40 days. Since then, no one has had the luxury of physical revelations of the risen Jesus. O ye of little faith, Jesus even said to Thomas that future generations would have to believe without seeing. But seeing isn't everything. If I was suddenly struck blind, I would not immediately pronounce that my wife doesn't exist. Blind from birth people fall in love with people they will never see. And sighted people do not love and trust people just because of what they can see. The reality of Jesus in my life is far beyond my five senses. The reality of my wife is far beyond the limits of my five senses too. You don't have to think up good arguments for falling in love. You don't have to brainwash yourself and wishful think yourself into a state of being in love. You just have to be open and sensitive to the possibility of being in love. When it hits you, you will know. Lost sheep do not find shepherd. Sinners do not find saviour. We do not prove Jesus exists. We just watch and pray. And we find that he bursts into our upper rooms. He calls our name like he did to Mary. He gently sidles up to us as we go on our way like Cleopas. And he takes us aside like he took Peter. And when he does, we have all the proof we will ever need. And we will be celebrating both his resurrection and our own resurrection forever. Well, bye for now. See you again next time. And I'll leave you with Michael Card singing Love Crucified Arose.
Arose, the one who lived and died for me was Satan's name.